run for cover. This is Radioactive Sports with superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson.
I take pride in my hair.
Feel that? Radioactive Sports in the afternoon on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Booker, Fontaine, Coyle up front for Minnesota. Spurgeon and Dumba. Here's Dumba. And he fanned on it. Fontaine in the corner. Zucker scores! Scandella in for Minnesota. Scandella spins and goes off the post. That might be a single goal. Granlund wins the draw for Minnesota. Pominville scores! Stewart has it to Zucker. Empty net for Nashville. Zucker scores! And Minnesota has a two-goal lead in Nashville.
I think what happened right there was they opened up a big can of whoop-ass.
They did. Did you watch the game at all last night?
I did not, but I was keeping track of it on Bleacher Report.
Yeah, I made the mistake of trying to watch it. I watched the first period till about 12 minutes in.
Was it good?
Darcy Kuemper allowed two goals on five shots, and I thought,
here we go.
Dubinator's not playing. Parisi, Nino Niederreiter, Vanek, none of them are playing. This is going to be a bloodbath. I'm turning this off. There's no way that I need to put myself through this. Let next time I checked in, they were up 4-2. I might be a bad luck charm.
Promise us you won't watch any more hockey.
No, I'm going to watch hockey because normally they win, but it was just a thing there last night.
All I know is just when we thought we had to get a little bit worried, like most Minnesota fans do, when things get good and times start looking up, we all kind of protect ourselves, you know. The guard goes up and the wall stays up, and finally something reassures everybody that you haven't got anything to worry about. I mean, this is a pretty good team. This is a pretty good team. Beat Nashville again on the road, third time this year on the road in Nashville.
I hope we play them in the playoffs. We're going to crush them.
We'll beat them down.
Want to introduce our guest?
We have Brian Murphy with us, everybody.
Happy Friday.
You, where have you been like the last month or so? Well, the last time we talked with you, it was the Bridgewater Kyle Rudolph report in California.
SoCal, yes. And I came home and it snowed. And then I
snowed went, last night.
It snowed today.
I went down to Florida for a week to close spring training for the Twins, which may be the happiest time they have all year, it looks like. It was the final couple of days in the sun. And the wheels are the lug nuts are off. The wheels, they're grinding the axle onto the pavement. A really sad showing in Motown.
Oh, God. You're from Detroit.
I am.
Right? Yeah. Did you take personal... Did you take what Bert Blyleven tweeted out yesterday personally at all?
No, I take offense to what Bert Blyleven broadcast, but not what he said about Detroit.
Wow. He was thankful for the low clouds because he didn't have to see Detroit.
Oh, yeah, I saw it all.
Downtown.
I did. I saw it all. What the irony of that is that view from the press box at Comerica Park might be the most gorgeous, brilliant view
of
downtown Detroit.
Downtown Detroit is.
It is a dump, but it's my dump. It is my dump.
Yeah, just don't make fun of my dump. My wife is from there, too.
It's a lot better.
Yeah,
it's getting better, but that's like saying, you know, Baghdad, you're not going to die. You may just get maimed if you walk down the street. No, it's got a long way to go, but it's a hell of a lot better than it was 15, 20 years ago.
Were you surprised at the backlash that he
had? No, it's Twitter. Everybody's got a pitchfork and a grudge.
And FSN and the Twins were like, we're so disappointed in Bert Blyleven.
I think that was ridiculous. I think what elevated this story to what it was the overreaction and panic of the Twins / FSN to come out of their way and apologize on behalf of a broadcaster who frankly says a lot of things like that. And that wasn't even that provocative. I mean, you know, never mind. I mean,
people just take everything so seriously.
And
man,
it was like
everyone relaxed.
It was cut and paste. The apology was a cut and paste rendition of if he would have molested somebody in the booth. That's exactly what they would have said.
It was barely even an apology.
It was ridiculous.
But looking back, my favorite Bert Blyleven moment.
And then the American League batting title. Joel Mauer, 2-for-5 so far in the series against Jeter. We're going to do this thing over again because I just it up. Oh, we're live. Well, I'm sorry for that.
Oh, we're live. That happens to you and I, Soup, every single afternoon. Oh, we're live? We're really sitting here? Yeah, we are.
Guys. I'm just curious. Did Bert circle the steaming pile of dung that he stepped into last night?
He may have circled it. Circle it, Bert. That's kind of
I thought it was so much to do about nothing.
Of course it is.
Ridiculous.
It's Twitter. I mean, if you get riled up about getting riled up and people getting riled, Twitter is a swamp.
Yeah.
It is a great tool.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is a swamp of humanity.
And the governor of Michigan had to respond and saying, I think our downtown looks fine and dandy. And then Burr Blylevin came back and saying, well, then you probably none of you guys have ever probably seen your own downtown. And it was a back and forth. It was fantastic.
Well, they're off the skids now, though. I mean, they're out of bankruptcy, right? They just came off bankruptcy
yes.
about 5-6 months
a
ago.
A clean bill of health, financial.
Thanks
and now
General
they can
Mills,
start... General Motors?
Yeah.
No, the General Motors, Ford, they're all doing well now, thanks to Obama, because he bailed them out. But
no, but that's why I'm saying, is that why Detroit's now out of bankruptcy, because the car companies are doing well again?
No, not necessarily. They had to burn it down to save the village, so to speak. There was so much corruption and graft, and you don't have all day for me to explain
what
it was a 40-year death spiral in that town, and it's just, it finally hit rock bottom.
Hmm. Well, my wife's from there too. I've been down and back from Detroit. I played against Detroit every year, but I've been going back and forth now for like the past 3 years.
But you played in
eight
Pontiac,
or ten times,
didn't you?
We played in Pontiac, not Detroit proper.
How far away is Pontiac?
25-30 miles away. It's not the same.
Is it like the Bloomington type of deal?
It is.
It's close little, there.
It's pretty nice actually. It's actually a better situation by a long shot.
Did anybody ever buy the old what was that? The
Silverdome?
Yeah,
no,
Silverdome.
Go online. It's just
being,
it's like $100.
Well, it's
like
being
that.
Battered by the elements out there. The roof caved in.
Oh, no.
They basically stripped it to the studs. They sold off. They had a garage sale you could buy the popcorn maker and the scoreboard and the seats. But it's still the big white elephant that's sitting out there. They haven't figured out what to do with it.
They were trying to sell it for a while for like nothing, right?
Yeah,
why not just tear the damn thing down?
I think they were trying to sell it for $50,000.
But you know, Pontiac in and of itself is bankrupt. They have their own issues up there as well. They're a mess. That city proper as well is a disaster. So
what isn't a disaster in Michigan, really, when you think about it?
Well, the Tigers aren't. You know, they seem to. And that's one thing.
Look where they're playing.
I'll give Snyder credit. I'm not a big fan of his governing style or his politics, but he did, when he tweeted that photo back, he did happen to have the American League Central Division Championship flag in there.
Yeah.
Which
you got to let that one hang in there. I don't know. I mean, I kind of like Detroit. I used to like playing there, too.
Hey, Detroit's a fantastic sports town.
It is.
Great people. It's just got a few issues.
Just a few.
Muddling through.
A lot of things that you've written. Brian Murphy, of course, one of our favorites on the show, 105 The Ticket, Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. New information on Adrian Peterson I saw you posted. Was that yesterday or today?
Yeah, nothing, stop the press's worth, but, the NFL, no surprise, is appealing the ruling by Judge David Doty that basically vacated his suspension to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. It was their deadline. They basically said in 47 pages, Judge, you are wrong, and here's why you are wrong, and please, appellate judges, smack down David Doty and tell him why he's wrong. This is really, it has nothing to do with his playing status. They're two separate issues. As we know, Adrian met earlier this week with Commissioner Goodell to talk about his reinstatement, which on April 15th, he is eligible to be put back on the active roster if Roger Goodell and the NFL folks deem him worthy to have gone through whatever hoops he needed to go through in the Minnesota courts to prove that he's still not beating his child. That being said, the NFL lost the case in court in which the Judge Doty said, you overreached, you usurped your powers, you cannot punish Adrian retroactively on the new I don't want to bog everyone down with it.
It's boring. It's disgusting.
It's very boring.
But when it comes up, what is it, next Wednesday, April 15th,
yes.
If he's reinstated on April 15th, which I think he's on pace to
no reason to believe he won't be.
And so, but then I think in your article too, you said opening statements for some case would be in October, which is the court case going to continue to go on?
It will continue to go on, but it will not affect whether or not Adrian ever lines up again or who he lines up for or whether he gets paid. They're two separate issues. What the NFL wants to do is they want to knock out David Doty's ruling, because what it does is it shrinks Goodell's power to deal with players in the future. This is really just a labor dispute. Mm-hmm. It's a power play between Goodell, the league, and the union, and Peterson is the pawn in this case. But they will have no effect whatsoever on whether or not he gets reinstated, whether the Vikings trade him, whether he can make his money. That's completely different. So that's why I'm saying it's not a stop the press's moment, just another turn of the screw, as they say.
That's all it is. I'm tired of it, the whole thing.
No. Adrian fatigue.
I mean, it's just too much. I mean, either put your pads on and come out and play like a big boy, Or go run somewhere and go run somewhere.
Oh, you're going to have a lot. You're going to have at least 3 more weeks of it until the draft.
Oh, I know. And do you think it's going to happen, if at all? If there is a blockbuster trade where they offer two draft choices or whatever the case,
yep.
Is that going to be the leverage day to spring that?
I think leading up to it, and I was talking to somebody else about this, and I found it interesting, is because this is going to deal with his contract, you know, everybody knows he's due $12.7 million and $15 next year and $17, I think, in 17 or whatever.
Yep.
However, if the Vikings get an offer that they cannot refuse and they want to engage with a team, they're going to have to find out a way to nibble that contract down, whether it's the Vikings and Peterson agreeing to it, the Vikings, Peterson, and the suitor that is coming in with the trade. They're going to have to find a way to renegotiate that contract down. It's just way too expensive. That being said, I don't know how you do that if you're on the clock at the draft. That's going to be really dicey. You know, you're on the clock and a team comes to you.
That's an ultimatum. I mean, it's like, before you hang up, you better tell us yes or no because you're on the clock. And that's why they're going to call it that way. If a team really has something worth offering to get him, they're gonna pick up the phone and they're gonna say, "Look, you're on the clock. How about Adrian?"
Which leads me to believe there may be an agreement, wink, wink, in place.
Yeah, exactly. It's already
or
there.
Or some kind of a.
That's what I think.
They're gonna work. You know, there's some kind of back channeling going on because that can't get done on a clock like that.
So what would the agreement be if so and so player A is here at number 27 for the Dallas Cowboys? We would be interested in training. If that player's not there, then maybe not.
And Dallas says we'll be interested at Adrian at $8 million a year. How much can you eat of this, or how much Adrian get on the phone with him and find out how much he's willing to take a haircut for the price of getting out of Minnesota?
That would be insane to trade him to Dallas. That would be insane.
I say
to put him in Dallas. I mean, you're just, you know, you want to talk about a roadblock to getting to the Super Bowl anytime soon with him. I mean, that team is peaking right now.
Yeah, and him and Greg Hardy arm in arm too at the next charity function would be fascinating. But
I don't know how he got on the field so quick.
Because his case was thrown out by the courts, wasn't it? He appealed it, and it's
North Carolina thing. Yeah. It's different. Yeah. It went through. Yeah, it's another whole another mess. We could get Marsh Hallberg on here to deal with that.
Well, he'll be on at 4:45 today.
And I want to know why the NFLPA didn't like go grab him as a pawn.
Well, because I think they thought that Adrian was jobbed a little bit more than Hardy was.
Hardy abused his wife and did this and that. And was already
Hardy's
guilty.
Case was a little uglier. But you brought up Jacksonville. I think, you know what, Jacksonville makes sense in a lot
cap
of ways.
Cap money?
Certainly cap money. It's an AFC team. And it's like, you know what, Adrian?
Here, go
goodbye.
Down there.
Yeah. Go, have fun.
Bye, sucker.
You and Toby Gerhart.
Go win 5 games.
Knock yourself out.
Poor Toby Gerhart.
Wow.
Followed, Adrian, nice that you're here. Is there any space for me now in Minnesota? I would just move to Minnesota if I were.
But Toby Gerhart, I mean, he was terrible last year. He had injuries.
Yeah,
he's just not very good.
He's a meat and potatoes back. Yeah. That's what he is.
Yeah. He's a Matt Asiata.
Yes.
Not your every down guy, but he can surely compliment.
Kid,
I know the superstar disagrees.
I do. I think he's more than a just sort of a groveling, sort of a blue collar running back. Both of them. I think they could. And Gerhart can't catch the football as nifty as Asiata can. Asiata's pretty good football player.
Yeah,
and he can step in there and.
Did he rumble 45 yards against the Patriots that day down
did.
The sideline?
He took
a nice swing pass and just
swing pass
downhill.
Yeah, I mean he's actually, I think, very nifty, and he's a good pass protector. So I mean, he'll step up in there on a linebacker.
Yeah, he can do the little things correctly, but I mean, if he hits open space, he's going to be dragged down behind.
If you want 3 yards, he'll give you 3. If you want 6, he'll give you 3.
Vince Wilfork will come grab him from behind. That's how. I mean, he's just not good.
Are you, Mike? Are you satisfied with a running back tandem of Jerick McKinnon and Matt Asiata again if they get assets in return for Peterson, or do you need to draft a guy?
I think you probably have to get into the draft and dig into. That second layer maybe of running backs. I mean,
Tevin Coleman,
Gurley and Gordon. I don't think you see either one of those guys. But
David Cobb.
Maybe even David Cobb. He's more of a scat back.
More like McKinnon.
McKinnon, maybe. Yeah, and McKinnon is not a running back yet. I would say yes, we could get it done. If McKinnon's progress, not only the back injury and surgery, but can he become more of a fluid back instead of a quarterback converted to running back?
He averaged 5 yards per carry last year.
Yeah, but
man.
He doesn't look like a guy, and I don't know if there's anyone on that roster that can have 25 carries a game.
No.
Now, granted, maybe they don't need 25 carries a game, but...
Only Adrian Peterson and the big-time running backs can really do that.
Yeah, well...
No other team...
I think Asiata's a warhorse. I think he's reliable. He catches the ball out of the backfield, and I only saw him put the ball on the ground, I think, once. And so I think on the goal line, I swear by him.
If he grows back his dreads or whatever that he had that really long hair, then I'll like him again. But other than that,
he had long hair.
Passiata? When did he have long hair?
Oh, he had long hair forever.
What?
Yes.
You're
thinking of Tahi, aren't you?
No, I'm thinking of Matt Asiata, yeah.
I don't remember that. I've been in that locker room 4 years. I don't remember him with long hair.
I've been in that locker room forever and ever, and I just wasn't looking.
Then again, he might
up high enough to.
When you're the 70th guy on the roster, maybe I wasn't looking that hard. I don't know.
He was on that developmental squad for a long time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. I mean, he's a grinder.
We're going to come back again, and we've got the sharp-dressed man with us, Brian Murphy. Man, look, do you have a picture of it?
How did you not know he had long hair? He almost looks like, back in the day, like a warrior, a Native American warrior with that hair. You see what I'm looking at.
I do. Marianne from Gilligan's Island, kind of.
Maybe that, too. What? I can't believe you guys missed the long hair.
I never remember that.
All the way down past his nipples?
Yeah, I just don't remember that.
I never remembered that, I swear.
That was every year.
Well, he wasn't out there on the field very many times to be able to see it, but apparently you noticed
Ben
it.
Holson doesn't miss a thing.
No, he doesn't.
Especially when it comes to hair. I have hair envy. I don't have it. That's the problem.
Come on back. It's Brian Murphy, Pioneer Press, and Viking beat writer. I think that's fair to say. And then we're going to come back and talk the talk and walk the walk. A little more of this, a little of that. Emphasis on the lat. Right here at Radioactive Sports. What?
The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. Only on 105 The Ticket.
Joey Logano just screams out into the lead. McMurray's back in the second. Matt Kenseth and Kevin Harvick side by side for third.
Night racing in the Lone Star State. The Duck Commander 500. Live from Texas Motor Speedway. Saturday at 5:30 p.m.
That's the battle for the lead in turn one.
This is Brad Keselowski.
This is Dylan Hart Jr.
This is Jeff Gordon.
This is Jimmy Johnson.
This is Kevin Harvick.
Your home for NASCAR in the Twin Cities is Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Back to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson on 105 The Ticket.
He's a sharp-dressed man. He really is.
Oh, my God, it's huge.
It is huge.
Argyle socks. Good-looking shirt. Nice Twin Cities. Oh, the Pioneer Press jacket. The windbreaker. Oh, pullover at that. And now he's making me feel like this shirt was just pulled out of a bull's ass.
Well, I feel like it's not. It was pulled out of a bull's ass.
This is laying on the floor. It doesn't wrinkle. And I got to show the flag.
But
so.
Seriously,
it's good for you.
Look at
it's
what he does with his accessorizing with the cuffs of the shirt that come out underneath the reg.
He knows what he's doing.
I'm sweating. That's why I rolled him up.
Murphy, would you take a question from the peanut gallery about Adrian Peterson?
Okay, sure.
Oh, my God.
Is that all right?
Radio roulette?
No, it's not radio roulette. It's only radio roulette. That when we don't know who's calling.
Oh, but we do know who's calling. Oh, hellfire.
It's Brian from Minneapolis. Brian from Minneapolis, here on 105 The Ticket.
Yeah. I got to take the call.
You're on Brian Murphy from the Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com. What's up, Brian?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I got two questions for you, actually. The one real quick is, do you guys feel that St. Louis is actually going to move to Los Angeles? But the second one is, I'm just getting the feeling that this is just a big show with Adrian Peterson, that the Vikings know what they're going to do. The NFL knows what they're going to do. It's just something to perpetrate the mystery there, keep people talking, keep the NFL and the Vikings in the forefront of the news. You can shoot me out of the water if I'm wrong, but you just get that overwhelming feeling that this is all, it is staged, but they already know what they're going to do. They're just not telling us so we can speculate all day long.
I'll take the second question first. I think the Vikings know exactly what they want to do, and I think they're going to allow anybody willing to cough up a king's ransom to come to them and blow them away with an offer. So I do agree with that. And short of that king's ransom offer, I think they're just going to slow play it, and let Adrian. Let him whine, let him complain, let him, play the victim a bit. But at a certain point, when a mandatory minicamp comes and there's money on the table to be made, i.e. bonuses, and then there's fines in play, and then there's training camp, and if he doesn't show up, he's A, leaving more money on the table, B, not playing, which I don't think he wants to miss any more time if he's going to pursue him at Smith, And as we said before, it's like he's going to have to explain to the public why he shouldn't honor his contract. So if they believe he's not going to be so much of a malcontent that he's going to create a circus, I think the Vikings are willing to wait that out. As far as the NFL goes, they probably do know that they're going to reinstate him. I think Goodell probably has a pretty good idea of that after meeting with Adrian the other day. So, yeah, I think everything is lining up here. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to keep it in the headlines because I would say most people are pretty fatigued at this point and would want
some
resolution.
Anytime we talk about Adrian Peterson, the phones light up, though.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't necessarily think it's good, per se, for the NFL to dredge up images of a four-year-old boy getting whipped bloody. So I don't necessarily think it's good that it drags on.
I don't either, and I'm with you on that. I also agree with in agreement with you and the previous statement that you made in the last segment, where if they do know already, I'm sure they do, it's too big a deal to take a phone call and to pawn it off that way the day of the draft.
On the night of the draft.
To take a spontaneous phone. This has already been worked out, if at all. It's been
groundwork.
It's all been set, and they've been posturing for this. I'm sure they have.
Right.
If they've been wanting to really dump him, they hold all the chips, though, because if he comes back and they force him to come back, they get Adrian Peterson back.
Do you think Adrian Peterson really, really wants to leave? He's fed up with Minnesota and this and that, everything that he's been saying, or is it just him posturing, as we're talking about posturing and so many what-ifs, him posturing to make sure that he gets that $12.75 million, because without that conversation going on, or Adrian Peterson showing that he doesn't want to be here or this or that, that completely takes that $12.75 million conversation out of rotation there, and he's going to be making $12.75 million if he plays for the Vikings.
I think he already knows that. The Vikings have not indicated. I don't think they're going to bait and switch and say, okay.
But they would have if he wouldn't have made a stink, don't you think?
Maybe, yeah. I think they realize that. I think that this is probably the best way to get him into the fold. But I don't get the impression that Adrian, I think he's trying to create, certainly his agent's trying to create a trade market. And I don't think he really wants to come back here. You know why?
I don't think so.
He's going to come to Minnesota and answer questions, and he'd rather go to Dallas and be treated like a hero.
Down in Dallas, I think the culture of what he did, at least, is more acceptable down there. I mean, people might lay off him a little more down there than they would up here, obviously.
And he'd be the finishing piece for a Super Bowl run.
And that's why I'm like, this just cannot be happening with us and the Cowboys. I have this Herschel Walker flashback. Now we give the big-time running back to them, and they go to the Super Bowl again.
Rick Spielman's smart enough to know that Minnesota Vikings fans
are... I would think so, because they're close. They're knocking on the door right now.
He knows that he's not going to give them their final piece to run to the Super Bowl, and the backlash. People don't love Rick Spielman as it is. So anyway, thanks, Brian, for calling anytime.
And St. Louis might be going to Los Angeles. I have no idea. I mean, that's as good a bet as anything, and Jacksonville would be another. San Diego would be even the more likely choice, I think.
I think L.A. remains the NFL's boogeyman for a long time, scaring every market into building a new stadium.
I've also heard that St. Louis would move back to Los Angeles and Jacksonville would fill the hole in St. Louis. So many what-ifs about possibilities, but what if they want two teams in the NFL. We're talking to Brian Murphy, Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. The reason you came in today, because you wanted to hang out with the two coolest guys in sports radio, obviously.
They're not here yet, but no, they're supposed to be here in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I got a couple hours.
Marshall Berg and then Jim Rich will be here just shortly, just a little bit. But you wrote this article about Irvin Santana, the Twins 80-game suspension PED use guy. Interesting article about the lawsuit for, was it, $40,000? It's turned into $160,000 because he ended up buying jewelry from Major League Jewelry or what? I mean,
it's a little bit of a complicated tale, and it's got a little bit of Miami noir to it. Sort of it's the weirdness of it elevated the story. I don't even know if I'd have written about this a week ago, but once he got busted for steroids, and the weirdness of this story sort of elevated it. But I'll say this. Background here. When he was with Atlanta, he agreed to purchase $40,000 worth of necklaces, bracelets, bling, various stuff from this Miami jeweler, Major League Jewelers, that he's dealt with in the past and that have supplied other ball players and celebrities. Apparently, he didn't like what he got. And, after his initial $2,000 down payment, refused to pay. So the jeweler came after him and said, hey, we need this payment. And he refused and called the jewelry fake, at least according to the complaint. It wrote a letter saying it's fake. It's not what I ordered. So the jeweler got his hackles up a little bit and said, you know what? I'm going to sue you. And I want the $40,000. I'm suing you for defamation because you called it fake and you're ruining my reputation. And I want the appraisals that you got to prove that it's fake. And this is where the story takes kind of a strange turn. Santana and or his representatives hired a gemologist in Arizona to look at the six items, and the idea being, I want to prove this is fake. So they get that she writes up a report, provides it to Santana. Santana turns it over to the lawyers for the jewelry store, and it has all the bells and whistles and whatever the, you know, measurements and weights and descriptions, but no dollar figures attached to it. So the jeweler's lawyers are like, well, this is kind of odd. We think this stuff is real. We're going to subpoena the jeweler or the gemologist out in Arizona. We want the real documents. Well, lo and behold, they get the trove of documents back, and hey, they've all got dollar figures on them, and the $40,000 that he agreed to purchase, they're not worth $40,000. They're worth $42,000. So the actual effort of him trying to prove that these things are fake, they actually turned out to be worth more. And now they added more counts to the lawsuit of civil theft and falsifying documents. And bottom line is this should not be in court. It's about 2.2%. Of his $55 million million dollar guarantee contract with the Twins. Why are you in this mud fight with a jeweler over 40 grand, which is like change in the couch cushions for you, when you could have really resolved this? And it's just some weird details that have come out.
That's really strange. I mean, it doesn't take very long or very much jewelry.
Questions about his judgment, along with the steroids.
Yeah.
Use.
Well, yeah. Twins fans were sold on the fact that he's this veteran pitcher. He's an innings eater. He's coming here. He loves to play baseball. He's going to be a great guy in the clubhouse, this and that. And all of a sudden, he's got this weird jewelry thing that he refuses to pay, which is going, again, to question his judgment. And then this 80-game suspension for PED use. Did we get sold a bag of rotten tomatoes?
Well, let's see, if he hasn't been able to throw a pitch yet, right? So we don't even know that. The Twins are going to save at least $6.5 million until he gets back on the roster in mid-July.
You're stuck with him for four more years.
You're stuck for four more years. And the market apparently was pretty soft for him, and we wonder why. I mean, it seemed like they were negotiating against themselves to get this guy, and they're locked in for 4 years and $55 million. And we're not going to see him until July, and by then maybe he'll settle this lawsuit.
It's incredible. $40,000 for this guy to argue over. And by the way, it doesn't buy a lot of jewelry in this day and age. It really does. $40,000 is not a lot. So whatever he's...
Why don't you ever buy me $42,750 worth of jewelry?
Well, it's just... It's, I did. And you poo-pooed it.
So. It's a Keystone Cops
fake.
Kind of thing, too, because the way the other thing is they accused... Apparently, the original documents were whited out with the dollar figures.
Okay. So here
like,
we go. The old whiteout. In today's world, the whiteout comes out again. Like it was typed up on a Corona, the Smith Corona typewriter.
Yeah, it's just,
That's kind of...
Estupido.
Ooh, yeah. Not good. We're going to come back and do the 4.5 questions because it's damn near 4:30, and that's how we play the game. Ben came up with a just brilliant idea that we'd ask he would ask me four questions and throw in a half question, which he calls word association or a halfie.
No, I call it a halfie.
You call it a halfie.
Because oftentimes I have a halfie.
I'm tired of you. We'll
I'm
be
tired
back.
Of you too. That's Are why you? I'm glad it's Friday and I can almost have a vacation.
I love the fact that I'm going home for the weekend and trying to separate myself from you. So that's awesome. And Brian Murphy, I'll hang out with you all weekend long. There, Ben. Come
perfect.
On back. Radioactive Sports. We'll get along.
From pro to college to high school, we've got it all covered.
If you put on 23, you put Jordan on your back. And that's what Zach LaVine did. He really lived up to the moment.
In one of the biggest stages in basketball.
Passionate sports talk on your sports station. 105 The Ticket.
Sacrifice
life
chicken or something.
You know, a lot of people around this place are starting to think that I'm not the sharpest knife on the tree.
Oh, God, here we go.
And that I'm not the brightest bulb in the drawer.
Damn it, Maverick.
Well, whatever. By the way, there's breaking news.
Is it
breaking
really?
News. Yeah, breaking news.
Hold on, let me get
big
the breaking
time,
news
breaking
sound
news.
Effect.
Yeah. Just breaking.
Okay.
At the Masters, and we'll talk more about Spieth, whatever his name is. He's kicking some ass. But how about Dustin Johnson?
Love
he
it.
Finds himself at 7 under par now, sets the Masters record with 3 eagles
Whoa.
In a single round. What? Okay, that's it. That was the breaking news.
Don't ever do that to me again. Okay,
right. Sorry. You know I'm so worn out with you by now.
Who? Are you looking at
me.
Brian Murphy?
Well,
no. Why are you down on golf?
I'm not down on golf.
What's
I
the
love
deal?
Playing golf. I will only play golf when it's dry enough. I can use a cart, and it has to be above 60 degrees. I love golf. I really do.
Why are you
Championship Sunday? Perfect. Love it. I'm in.
I can tell you love it.
Let's go.
I thought you were down on golf. You didn't sound. It's Masters week, and you kind of looked at me cross-eyed, like, "Well, we got to talk about the draft."
Why?
No,
why did you do that? I saw you do it.
It's just there's that sense in you that we cannot not talk about the NFL ever.
No, that's not at all.
I had your back for a while, but then I started agreeing more with Brian. You were.
I'm turning him.
Turning.
Yes, he's turning. He's turning you over.
All right.
New leaf, hopefully.
Okay.
All right.
4.5 questions. You want to take part? You want to answer some questions?
You tell me. I'm your guest.
Yes, do it. You're the guest.
You take all. We'll take 4 questions, you and I. We'll keep it short. You get the first crack at whatever question.
The Wild certainly keep you on their toes, don't they? Down 2-0 last night watching the game. First 10.5 minutes, I gave up watching because Parisi, Vanek, Dubs, they weren't playing. And so I thought, why would I watch this blowout? I mean, 10 minutes in, Darcy Kuemper had faced 5 shots, 2 goals right after. It was unbelievable. I checked back in a little while later, and just like that, the Wild are up 4-2. Darcy Kuemper bounced back, saving over 30 shots. What does it mean to the team to know that they can win without their top 3 goal scorers and their MVP?
Am I taking this first? I don't think it means much because I don't think it's going to matter because I think the bigger question was that they could win with a backup goalie that hadn't started a game since January 6th.
On the road in Nashville.
That was the key because this is really only going to be the only game he starts, assuming Dubnyk doesn't get hurt and they're on a long run. They needed to know, I think, and Darcy Kuemper needed to know that I can at least play up to game speed and deliver a victory. And 12 straight road runs is pretty impressive. That's a good way to run the table, and they can set the record, Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, I would say it's more important because they got scoring depth. So I don't worry about them not being able to score as much as I worry about what are they going to be like if Dubnyk gets hurt and they need to plug somebody in there. That's been their hamstring for the last few playoffs is goaltending.
No question. And I agree completely with what you said. I would just add that I commend the team for not going in and just laying an egg because they didn't really have to do anything. But they did go in and test themselves against the Predators and test some new people against the Predators because it could come down to that with us against Nashville. And to have Kuemper knock the rust off, and it took a few in that first period to finally get some of that rust off, but then he felt himself come back, apparently. And we came back and won handily, but he actually found his rhythm again, and that's good to get a goaltender dusted off.
Especially
we're gonna need him.
Especially for a team that doesn't do well when they allow the first goal, and they allowed the first 2 goals right off the bat, and it was just I was looking at the TV going, I mean, we have the Twins going on. We have the Timber. I just don't need this at this point in time.
Silly Masters tournament going on.
Yeah, what's that even? I don't even know. Golf? What's that? Stupid. Question 2. Vikings released their tentative dates and specific matchups for this year's preseason. 5 games this year, up from 4 because the Vikings taking part in the NFL's Hall of Fame game April 9th in Canton. It's an honor to be selected, of course, to play in that first preseason game of the year. But does it bring any concerns? Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Look, you're about as bad as he is.
Why do you hate everything?
We don't need
5 preseason games. That's what I'm saying. Does that bring up any concerns adding an extra game before the regular season starts? Because everybody's always worried about injuring so-and-so or Adrian Peterson's not going to play. But now they're not only are there 4 games, there are 5 games this year.
Yes, and it's an extra week at Mankato, which means there's more ankles and hamstrings that can cause problems. Here's the thing. Obviously, it's a nice marquee matchup. You've got Tinglehoff going into the Hall of Fame against the Steelers, one of their Super Bowl opponents. I mean, it's 2 classic organizations. I get all that, but no, I don't think we need 5 preseason games. I'm guessing that the coaching staff, certainly the players, aren't thrilled about this. I don't think the coaching staff, they're ambivalent, but I think they'd probably rather not have to ramp up and roll the dice with more injuries. I will say this, though. It does mean the 4th preseason game, right, is at Dallas. So does that mean the 4th preseason game is like the 3rd preseason game where all the starters will play? And what if Adrian Peterson is actually in Dallas?
Yeah, well, it's not like players.
Excuse me.
Easy, I'll be right there. Just clean the stall up and I'll be right there.
We don't have a cow.
I thought after I got her primed, she just took right off. We don't have a cow?
No.
Well, I don't know what that was then. The 5.
But why 5, though? That's my question to you, especially superstar. Why 5? Why?
Well, we always griped about it. We always had 5. I mean, in the old days, they played 6.
6, yeah.
Why not just make it one of the 4 preseason games, August 9th, Canton, Ohio, Hall of Fame game, as one of your 4? Why does it have to be 5?
Because it starts off, it kicks off the entire season. It's a money thing, too. It's a money ploy, so. It's a big deal. I played in two of those Hall of Fame games, and they're pretty cool, actually. I mean, it's they treat you pretty good on that trip. I mean, that's a fun one to play if you're going to play any exhibition, and you have to have these exhibition games. I mean, people who think they don't need preseason games and they only need a couple games to sort of tune her up and just throw it out there on the field for the regular season, what we've been finding is taking less and less and less reps away from the veteran players, not making them get in their pads and do something with them, puts a bad product on the field for the first 2 to 3 weeks, and then you finally find out what you got, and you see teams come to life.
Yeah.
You see teams actually start to light it up, but you see really good teams asleep at the wheel for a couple weeks. It's because they haven't done anything yet. I mean, Denny used to play us into shape. We get more reps into the preseason. By the fourth one, if you're a kid, and trying to make the team, you better make a tackle on kickoff. That's all you're going to get in for, because the starters and the second teamers are going to get the whole game.
Twins were seventh in run production last year, and they scored one run in the three games they played in Detroit
via error.
Yeah, one run. That's not good. Pitching, obviously, Ricky Nolasco back here, injury MRI. They don't know what it is, but he's likely added to the DL. Could be something terrible. Irvin Santana, 80-game suspension, PEDs. 100 losses, is that possible or probable? Which, is it possible? Yes, probable. It's up to you guys to answer. New coaching staff doesn't have a ton of experience. Do you think there was a mistake heading into the season with what the Twins have? Or did it all fall apart with the injuries to the pitchers?
We are three games into a 162-game season. I think what happens is this is magnified because it's the first three games and everybody's watching. If this was mid-July, nobody would even sneeze. But I don't think I thought they were going to win 75 games anyway. So that
Me
gets
too.
Them, you know.
Both of us did.
So I don't see any reason to believe that this is going to prevent them from doing it. I think what's most disturbing, and I've said this before too, it's not, you know, losing 90 games is awful. How you look doing it is almost, you know, emblematic too, and how they just did not look like a Major League Baseball team in 3 days in Detroit. I mean, terrible at bats, terrible defense, couldn't get a guy to third base until halfway through the third game.
Awful pitching,
no life at all, and you think, you know, a new manager, new surroundings, first couple games of the year, you're going to have a little buzz. That I think is more disturbing, is how they look doing it, because I don't know, this is not a great team. Everybody realizes that, and I think as much as people don't want to hear it, this is not a playoff team, and then I think everybody knows that. It's coming with the prospects, but these prospects may be up here sooner if you see efforts like that.
That's what I think too. I mean, we had a couple of experts. I don't know. It was Schmaltz and who else that were talking about the Twins being a closer to a 500 club this season because of some of the different things that they had done in picking up some extra pitching and some other moves and Torii Hunter and all that stuff. But a lot of people were weighing into it and thinking that they would be close to 500. Now Santana goes and sits on the back burner for 80 games.
Yeah.
Does that make, I mean, I'm not a huge baseball guy. That guy out of the rotation, would that make that big a difference where people are talking like this already?
Yeah, oh yeah.
It would.
I mean, yeah,
it would.
Because he's your number two starter.
Granted. But still, I mean, if you just hit the ball and score some runs, I mean, that kind of covers for it.
Sure, but I mean, your number two starter, an innings, proven innings eater, and it's a psychological blow 3 days before the season
starts. That was my follow-up question.
The same thing that happened to the Vikings with Adrian Peterson after the first or second game last year in September with the indictment news. I mean, it just takes the wind out of your sails.
No,
I remember
does.
Leading into the last weekend. A week ago today is when the news broke. And we were all excited for Twins baseball to start on Monday in Detroit, and we get the news, breaking news, right before we go on the radio, and it was like, what?
Is the math right on that? 22 runs to one?
Yeah,
Detroit,
in three games.
22 runs
Four,
to one in,
seven,
in the three.
7-11, yeah. That's no good.
That's
and
not
it was
good.
An unearned run.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So we're going to do get the half
you
question.
You guys talk way too
sorry.
Much.
Why don't you screw off then?
You invite a guest in, you know, it's going to we're going to, yeah, sorry.
Things so, happen.
What do you guys think this is a
room.
Talk show or something?
Not really.
Thank God.
Sometimes it is.
What did you eat for lunch? That doesn't smell
you know,
very good.
It's like a Lebanese-type food. It's garlicky.
Tomb.
It's tomb. You know your Lebanese food
you
there, but... Where's Marsh at? Is he here?
Yes.
Do you see him out there?
And Debbie.
And Debbie's here.
I saw the
email she was coming into. Well, good. So at least we don't
are
have to look at Marsh.
Are you sticking around to talk about lawyer stuff, or you got to take off?
No, I love legal stuff.
Okay.
So maybe I can grill Marsh a little bit on some of this legal stuff.
Perfect.
Maybe I can go out and just grill some steaks. We got Marsh Hallberg up next and Debbie Lang right here on Radioactive Sports.
One and done. 1 hour of basketball talk every Saturday morning at 10 with Marcus Fuller of the Pioneer Press and Hardwood Rob.
Malik Ellison's the guy that I really want.
And he's the type of freshman that could come in. He might even start. I mean, he's that good. 6'6", the son of Never Nervous Purvis.
One of the all-time great nicknames, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you have Rick Pitino and Never Nervous Purvis in the stands at Minnesota games next year,
I'm cool with that.
Tune in every Saturday morning at 10. One and done. Basketball talk on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Radioactive Sports in the Afternoon on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Because people like to say salsa.
I like to say salsa.
I love salsa. Saying salsa.
I'll have some salsa. Pass the salsa.
Oh my God, it's cute!
The bowl of salsa, that's what you're dragging to.
I find myself sitting in a room full of really well-dressed people, a sharp-dressed man, two very sharp-dressed men, and a lovely, lovely young lady just walked in, Debbie Lang. Marsh Hallberg joins from Hallberg Criminal Defense.
And you're here in a bathtub of salsa.
Well, yeah.
How inappropriate.
Only because he doesn't really like laying in the bathtub of salsa, but he likes when people say salsa.
Oh, just the word. So.
Because people like to say salsa.
I like to say salsa.
People love saying salsa.
Because people like to say salsa.
Yeah.
What about guac?
What's that?
Guac.
I prefer like a garlicky. Okay.
Moving on.
I'm done. I'm done with that.
It's very
done.
Salty.
It's pasty.
Yeah.
Which is a gross way to describe food. Okay.
I wish I would have dressed up, and you probably should have too, because we're super underdressed.
I know. This look is our at own this. Radio show, this is ridiculous.
We're like the slums. We thought this was television. Nobody told us.
That's right. Debbie Lang, too, from Hallberg Criminal Defense. Every day, or every Friday, by the way, at 4:45, brought to you by Ability Bail Bonds. Let's get down to the brass tacks here. We're also joined by Brian Murphy, Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com.
Pretty tough.
It's
generated today, too.
It's a, yeah.
Yeah, tough. Some tough subjects.
We're talking about Aaron Hernandez killed a bunch of people, allegedly.
Allegedly.
What?
Just one guy, right?
Well, this one. The 2012 is two more.
Old Lloyd, and then
shot a guy in the eye, all that stuff.
But there's a couple more murders that he's going to stand trial for next.
And we'll get into that. And then we're going to talk about the Boston Marathon bomber. Guilty, death penalty, martyrdom, all that stuff. It's a pretty deep subject.
Very. Yeah. And then to complete the trifecta.
Adrian Peterson.
We cannot talk about
AP. One of these things does not belong with the other. Which one?
Okay. Where do you want to go from here?
Well, I'll talk about AP. Do the local stuff first.
Do it. Sure.
So yesterday, this is just the lawyer's dream, that you just keep billing these big, really rich clients for a zillion dollars. So yesterday, the NFL, not sour grapes, not happy with it, and their butt kicked by Judge Doty in Minnesota, has filed how many pages was it, Debbie?
I think it was 46-page brief.
And this is no kidding. We actually read this sucker before we came in today. So we've, right here.
You guys have quite the exciting life.
We have no lives. That's why we read it.
Green eggs and ham yet.
Well, what doesn't make sense to me, because Brian Murphy wrote an article on this story at the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, and opening statements can happen in October or something.
Oral
like
arguments,
that.
Yeah.
Oral arguments, and Adrian Peterson likely to be reinstated here in 5 days on Wednesday, April 15th. So he'll be reinstated back into the NFL, and the NFL, and then they'll still be fighting this deal because they want the power to be able to nail people
exactly
for their problems in the future.
Exactly. They don't. This is we talked about this months ago. This is so not about AP anymore. And regardless of what he did and how bad it was and all those things, near you love or hate the guy, this is all about two really powerful entities with just got way too much money and time on their hands, and they're fighting over contracts 5 years from now, 10 years now, and the precedent they set for discipline and power, and the power of an arbitrator versus the power of a judge, and who gets to what tail wags what dog,
who can pee farther, you name it.
Yeah.
What did do you think Judge Doty strayed out of his lane a bit, or who's got does the NFL have a beef, a legal beef that they can get this overturned?
They certainly believe that they do, but you know, we read this document and it was painful to read, but it appears that they are claiming that Doty overstepped his bounds, and you know, personally, I don't think he did. Marsh, what are your thoughts on that?
Sure, I'll just do the counterpoint on this.
Yeah.
Again, we said, how much did this, these 42 pages, what do you think this cost? I mean, how many six digits of money did they pay?
$600 an hour? Yeah, this is Aiken Gump in Washington.
This is
White Shoe. Yeah.
Well, we all know how good Doty is. You've talked
Doty's
about
great.
Him. You were there the day that it actually went down, and he's a fair guy.
But he's thwarted the league in the past.
Right.
And they hate him.
So he's like that guy to the NFL now.
Well, it's two really rare things that are kind of aligning seeing here. One is it's very rare to overturn an arbitrator's decision. So it's very rare what Doty did. And it's even more rare than to overturn the three-judge panel to overturn what
Doty did.
Doty did, excuse me. Yeah. Yep. So it's a double step here of where it's a very rare law on both sides to do what they are claiming they want done here.
What's the makeup of the Eighth Circuit and the politics of it and their relations with labor, and would that even factor at all into this?
Yeah, I think we looked at most of these appointments, I think, are Republican appointments. I can't, on this panel, you know, because it's kind of an arbitrary swing of who gets, or lottery gets put on this thing. I don't know who that'll be. But again, an excellently written document for the position they have, but I agree with Debbie, the stronger position is to side with Doty, I think.
Yes.
He's so does the elite go to the
he's
Supreme
never messed up before.
Is this a big enough precedent where they would want to go to the Supreme Court?
But them accepting it is, again, is only a, they don't have to take it. The Supreme Court only takes the cases they want to take, and I don't have the feel that this is the kind of thing that's a supremacy clause type of a thing that
no.
they would take.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they would take this.
Anytime you can strip the NFL of power, I'm all for it.
Me too.
Love it.
And just punch Goodell.
Push it
nose.
As far as you can. Adrian is going to wait until it's all said and done. When the dust clears, I guess we'll find out if he puts shoulder pads back on.
Marsh Hallberg and Debbie Lang from Hallberg Criminal Defense every Friday, 4:45. Brought to you by Ability Bail Bonds. We're also joined by Brian Murphy, our good friend from the Pioneer Press.
I just bailed him out.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
That's all
he's
we do.
He's lucky to be here.
That's all we do. Let's bail out Brian Murphy. That's something.
I bail you out quite a bit.
Ability
too,
Bail
show.
Bonds. They're great friends. They give us a great deal. They're unbelievable. And so,
let me get a car before I leave. It is the weekend.
take a little break here at Radioactive Sports. We'll be back. We've got Debbie and Marsh still in for another segment. Brian's going to join us for as long as you possibly can, which is
forever.
Say you're going to do the show with us.
Come on, Brian.
Commit.
Don't let us down.
I'm all in.
There it is.
You know, considering what you're paying me.
Death penalty for the possible Boston Marathon bomber who was guilty. We'll also talk Aaron Hernandez when we come back.
And the Iran nuke deal.
Oh, no. Get out of here.
Join us again, won't you please, Radioactive Sports.
105 The Ticket, available on iHeartRadio.
Need serious professional help.
Hell no. I've been seeking serious professional help.
I've handled dozens of balls.
So have I.
If you have a telescope, Uranus is visible too.
You're saying we don't have a cow?
No, we don't have a cow. That's a bull.
You know, I've been seeking serious representation, but the guy walked out of the room. Oh, wait, Marsh is back.
Marsh Hallberg.
I just had to get a bump.
Okay. Oh, you had to get a bump?
See,
They sprung him.
See, that's the thing. Two different generations. A bump, getting a bump to me is...
Is it an illegal drug?
Yes.
A bump to you?
One illegal drug.
Yeah, to those of us that are elderly, that's just a shot of alcohol.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I didn't mean the illegal drugs.
See, I think it was my dad over Easter weekend
Don
said, you want a bump? And I was like, I want a bump? Since when did you start doing cocaine, Dad? Jeez.
See, for me, it's completely different down in Iowa.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Do we want to know?
Completely different.
Oh,
is it involved? Never mind.
Is there a cow?
I was going to say sheep.
No, I was trying to do it with the cow earlier, but we don't have one. We have a bull.
Okay.
Anyway.
Coup whip.
How do we segue to a capital death penalty?
Yeah, so let's talk about death penalty. Smarnoff Nesnarnoff.
Okay. How do you talk about this? So, as people know, obviously, Sarnoff was found guilty of all counts for the Boston Marathon bombing. That was totally expected. The defense attorney basically just used that whole trial trying to get the jurors to think of him in a lighter way, in a sense of playing his brother, the dead guy, to be the bad guy. So the whole thing that comes now is, this can go for weeks, is simply the decision, does the jury decide to impose the death penalty or don't they? It has to be unanimous by that jury. So just one of them, so the betting people will say it's not going to happen because it takes all 12 of them to say he should have death. Statistically, 32% of federal...
33%.
32, well, we round up. Okay. God, I just... That's what I put.
I know, thank God.
Thank God she's here. Otherwise, we would have had the wrong information.
All day, you'd be saying 32 versus 33% juries find the death penalty. The 67% do not. So the chances are that won't happen. It's basically a balancing of two things, aggravating factors and mitigating factors.
And especially a jury in this state, Massachusetts does not have the death penalty at the state level. So you have jurors that reside in a state where the death penalty is not something that they see every day. But because they are sitting on a federal jury, they now have to address this question.
Pretty liberal state as well, Massachusetts, yeah. Right? Or is it a different outstate? Does it matter? It's Boston area. I mean, it's a pretty liberal area.
Yeah, well, and interestingly, during jury selection, all of these jurors had indicated that they, in fact, did not have strong feelings either for or against the death penalty. So the question becomes, were they answering those questions honestly? And in fact, do those feelings, are they there and are they going to resonate and play into their decision?
How does the federal government execute defendants or convicted felons? Is it what manner?
Firing squad.
No, I don't think it's that anymore.
Well, I think there are some actually still. I think there is, but not the U.S. government. Utah,
I think, still does it that way, but not the federal government.
Well, that's mostly,
and the problem they have is that by lethal injection, some of the drug companies in Europe that make the lethal injection are refusing to do that anymore because of liability concerns, everything else. So actually having low stock on what's available. Mm-hmm. And there's a movement, actually, you bring that up, you joke about the firing squad, to actually go back to that. Say, you know, in some senses, it's, you line up six guys, it's immediate, it's quick, it's certain.
And they don't know which bullet got them, right? Like, so they don't have to, you know.
There are also hangings available. I want to say maybe even Washington or Utah. Again, Utah's just crazy.
Do you know, you used to, Hennepin County, the old government center downtown, that's true, they used to hang people in the tower. Seriously, that is actually true.
What the hell's wrong with them? Yeah, so I'd be much more for like the guillotine.
Yeah, the guillotine. Ooh. Remember the gas chamber? Whatever happened to the gas chamber? That was awesome.
Ooh, what a way to go!
Much fun.
You guys would explain this a little bit better. But why does the same jury that finds guilt or innocence or not guilty have to also bear the burden of deciding whether to execute or not, as opposed to a judge, when the judge normally just says, "Okay, you got 40 years in prison now."
Well, the jury's heard all of the facts in the case, so they're going to be able to distinguish, is this case different than others that were charged with the same type of crime? And so that's one of the factors that they have to weigh, and that the prosecution certainly is going to bring up in this case. The fact that, you know, this individual scoped out the area, knew children and elderly people were present, the manner in which they went about this, how long the planning took, etc. Those are all factors that the prosecution's going to point to, and this jury has already heard those facts.
We're talking about the legal issues in sports with Marsh Hallberg and Debbie Lang from Hallberg Criminal Defense, brought to you by Ability Bail Bonds, also joined by Brian Murphy in the Pioneer Press. What are you pointing at?
Marsh wanted to say something.
Well, I don't.
Well, my question is, I thought you brought up something that was really important in the email earlier today, talking about martyrdom.
Yeah.
For this guy, and as a red-blooded American, I want to see him die for what he did in Boston. But then I don't want to give the martyrdom trophy to him or the people that are still alive that will see him as a hero. Then at the same time, so I'm kind of torn.
You know, I struggle with that too, just on a personal level, because I think it's an interesting question. I think all of us should ask ourselves, if you were on that jury, what would you decide to do? And one of the factors, I heard a real strong argument going, I don't care what Tsarnaev wants. You know, who cares what he wants? But what do we want as a country, as a jury? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really a powerful way to look at that. And the martyrdom issue, I think, is a very strong one. How will people react? Do we want to show other parts of the world we're better than this? We have a process. We just don't kill people, you know, without great thought and process, and we're not doing it here. But I still think he's going to be a martyr whether he sits in prison the rest of his life or he's executed. Either way, they're going to spin that look at the commitment he's made to his faith. So to me, I took the martyrdom issue out of that factor to say I'd be more likely to give the death penalty because just with what happened, you know, that I don't. I think he's going to be a martyr either way.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You know, Tim McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, he was executed. But the first World Trade Center bomber, he's still in prison. Right,
they did not. They did not vote for that, for them, for their planning.
Was he the blind cleric?
How do they come up with the discrepancy between these three, four cases? Who gets it and who doesn't?
Well, you know, we kind of talked how, I mean, this is to me, again, is a gold standard case like we talked about some others, is that if you aren't going to impose a death penalty here, now again, every jury is different, right, for the people that are there in their mindset, but if you're not imposing it here, when would you ever possibly
do it? That's
the amount of planning, the calculation, seeing those pictures how chilling it is. When you see him walk up behind that little boy that was just torn into 1,000 pieces and places the bomb at that point, and seeing these kids that he's going to blow up. And one of the greatest terror acts in our whole country. If